This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A bit later in the hour, Sir Roger Penrose will join us. But first, NASA, the space agency, submitted its budget for the coming year, and conspicuously absent from the budget was a plan to repair and refurbish the Hubble Space Telescope. Instead, there was money to help guide it to a fiery plunge into the ocean. The Hubble has become one of the brightest lights in NASA's space science program, and astronomers had hoped that NASA would fund a repair mission to it. Well, this was not the case, as the space agency deemed an astronaut repair mission too risky and a robotic repair mission too expensive and complicated to be done in time. Instead, outgoing NASA Administrator Sean O'Keefe said that with this budget, NASA is, quote, laying the groundwork for future exploration. There is funding for a new crew exploration vehicle to succeed the shuttle, and funding for President Bush's vision of sending people back to the moon and on to Mars. But some critics say that the new budget shortchanges NASA's science research. Steep cuts in environmental, biological, and physical science research, such as the Jupiter icy moon orbiter, being canceled. What do you think? How should NASA be spending its money, on sending people to the moon and Mars, or more science? Can the agency do both? That's what we'll be talking about this hour. If you'd like to get in on our conversation, our number is 1-800-989-8255. Let me introduce my first guest. Sherrod Bollard is the U.S. Congressional Representative for New York's 24th District. He's also the chairman of the House Science Committee, which just held its first hearing on the proposed 2006 NASA budget. He joins us by phone from his office. Welcome back to Science Friday.
It's good to be back.
Thank you very much. You're quoted in the Knight Reader newspapers this week as saying that NASA is trying to do too much at once, and that Congress, has never endorsed the president's vision and not even discussed the vision about where it should be going. Is that your current thinking?
It is indeed, but don't use that as a pejorative. I'm not the first one to suggest that NASA's trying to do too much with too little.
Mm-hmm.
The Gaiman Commission did that when it investigated the demise of the space shuttle Columbia. I think a lot of us recognize that you've got some hardworking, dedicated people, a lot of skills, but they're trying to do too much all at once with the limited resources, and they're hardly limited compared to what is being provided with other agencies. But I think that's the basic, that's an accurate quote.
Yeah. What would your priorities be? How would you prioritize what you think NASA should be doing?
Well, I think, first of all, the Hubble is one thing that all of us are interested in. I started this out as basically an agnostic on the issue, not knowing for sure in my own mind which way we should go, simply because I know the resources are limited.
Mm-hmm.
But I know how valuable Hubble is. So we had a hearing in the Science Committee a couple of weeks ago, and this is what Congress should do more often than maybe perhaps we do, but we did it. We invited some of the experts in and conducted a very extensive hearing, and to get the best advice we could. Everybody at the beginning of that hearing essentially stood up and cheered for the Hubble. Not literally, but figuratively. We like the Hubble. It's sort of the sparkling jewel in the crown of American science. But should we provide a servicing mission to Hubble, which is necessary by the 2007-2008 time frame, or else it will cease functioning as a very valuable resource? And I think most people start out with a bias, yes, let's do it. But at what cost? And we have to consider at all times the cost. And then when you're dealing with such things as whether we should service it with a shuttle mission, what about the risk? So we heard from all the experts. Bottom line is this. We're not in a position yet to make a decision. That should come as no surprise to a lot of people about how government works. But NASA is not able to answer some of the fundamental questions yet. It's not because they're shoddy in their workmanship. I mean, there's just so much to do. But we should know about the April time frame. How many shuttle flights we'll have before the program is able to complete the space station and ends in 2010. We should have that information by April. Now, the shuttle is scheduled to resume flight in June, and I'm crossing my fingers as we're talking, and I pray nightly that it will be a successful re-entry into space, but that's a question mark right now. We think everything is on course. We think it will be able to successfully launch in June, but we have no guarantee.
If you conclude that the Hubble should be saved, are you willing to throw some money earmarked for that sending a repair mission to Hubble?
Well, that's the thing that is the nub of the issue. I mean, we had Dr. Joseph Taylor, a very distinguished Nobel laureate, and, you know, he was very much a part of the National Academy of Sciences decadal study report, right. And he heads the Academy's Astronomy and Astrophysics Survey Committee. He testified, and he comes with a bias built in, understandably so. Loves the Hubble, loves what it produces, and says, of course we should continue it, but for the first time, and to his credit, they said, but there has to be a limit on what we're willing to spend for doing what we think needs to be done. And they were thinking the parameters of $400 million, but when we're talking about the likely cost being far in excess of that, probably at least three times as much, over $1 billion to closer to $2 billion, to provide a servicing mission for Hubble. And then they say, well, wait a minute, with the limited resources, will that take resources away from other projects in astronomy? We're building the next generation a telescope now, the James Webb, which is due to go online 2011. And everyone has to realize, when it comes right down to the bottom line, all the things we're talking about represent good science and opportunities for wise investments. But the fact of the matter is we can't print money fast enough
to
deal with all these, so we've got to set some priorities and make some decisions.
So we shouldn't expect to see Congress then save the Hubble.
I want to save the Hubble, but I'm questioning whether or not the resources...
I would think from a public relations point of view, this would be the best thing that NASA could do for itself, is this, you know, just because of what it's gotten out of the... those pictures and the research and whatever, you know.
Oh, NASA's doing a lot of things right. Look at every time I think about it, I get so excited about Spirit and Opportunity being up there on Mars and under Dr. Steve Squire's leadership and the people at Cornell and the East Coast and the Jet Propulsion Lab and the West Coast. I mean, that's one of the most exciting programs going right now.
Yeah, but you got also competition. I got the European Space Agency sending those great pictures back from Titan. They're sending great pictures from Mars. They're getting a lot of publicity. You get the impression that the U.S. is losing ground to Europe in a lot of places, including space now.
Well, should have the very emphatic message from the impressions we're getting from the competition is that the competition is more keen than it's ever been in our past.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's exploration of space or a lot of programs right here on Earth, I mean, the competition has never been as intense as it is, which argues for a continued and increase in the investments we make as a nation in science, and not just in the space program, not just in the shuttle program or the International Space Station, but science, the National Science Foundation.
Well, we're not seeing a lot of that happening, though.
Well, that's exactly right. So when I look at the space program, which I'm enamored with, I'm excited by, I have to look at it in line with where it fits in on the overall investment in what I refer to as a science enterprise. So am I willing to accept a big bump up in by comparison to other agencies for NASA for space exploration, at the same time I have to stand by and be witness to an actual reduction in the purchasing power of the dollar provided to the National Science Foundation, which essentially finances university-based research in America.
And this radio show, the full disclosure being known, absolutely. What about the future of the International Space Station? I mean, we're not getting very much out of it now. Why continue with it?
Well, I guess the answer is we've got so much invested right now. We've got to complete it and go on to the next thing. But completing it, we're sort of changing the direction of what we're doing on there. We're thinking about a whole variety of different experiments being conducted on the space station. Now we're really going to stick to the basic biological and physical experiments going on to look at the impact of prolonged periods in space on the human being, because we do want to go back to the moon by 2020, and certainly I endorse that. I applaud that. I think it's a worthy goal, and then beyond in the years ahead.
Mm-hmm. You have on your website, you mentioned that this is an interesting thing. The Iran Non-Proliferation Act would need to be amended to keep the space station going.
That's exactly right.
Tell us about that.
Well, because, I mean, the Iran Non-Proliferation Act is something rather significant. I should imagine President Bush being over talking to Putin over the last couple of days, as he has been. I had to have to believe if I was a fly on the wall, that would have been one of the topics of conversation. The fact of the matter is the International Space Station is operating right now and functioning through the good graces of our international partners, in this case, the Russians. Because we have not had a shuttle mission since the demise of Columbia 2 years ago, and it's being serviced by the Soyuz, the Russian Soyuz, that's getting people to and from the space station. We're not able to ferry large pieces of equipment to complete the station, and we've got a cosmonaut and an astronaut up there sort of maintaining the status quo. And if we get back into, well, all right, so that's where we are. So our agreement with the Russians lasts through April of next year. But Russians are saying to us, well, that we've fulfilled our part of the bargain. Now we need some more money. Well, we can't give them any more money because the INA, the Iran Non-Proliferation Act, says in effect that you can't give money to nations who are thought to be assisting in the proliferation of weapons with Iran. And most people seem to think that means the Russians.
Well, that's going to be very interesting to watch. I want to thank Congressman, thank you very much for taking time to talk with us. It's always a pleasure having you on.
Well, thank you. And I just appreciate so much your program encouraging the sciences in America, because that's the best investment we can make in our future.
Sherwood Bowlett, U.S. Congressman, representative from New York's 24th District, a Republican in charge of the chairman of the House Science Committee. We'll be back after this short break. We're going to switch gears and talk more about the future of NASA, take your phone calls, and talk with a NASA spokesperson and an astronomer to see where they think we should be heading. Don't go away. We'll be right back. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about the future direction of NASA, the space agency. We've heard the congressional perspective saying that it doesn't look like it's the Hubble is going to be saved by Congress. And joining me now are our two guests to help sort out a lot of what we're talking about this hour. Steve Isakowitz is the Deputy Associate Administrator for Exploration at NASA. Before that, he was a NASA controller. He joins us by phone from his office in Washington. Welcome.
Hi, Ira. Thank you.
You're welcome. Kevin Marvel is Deputy Executive Officer of the American Astronomical Society. He's responsible for government relations and public policy there. He joins us by phone from the National Radio Astronomy Observatory in Socorro, New Mexico. Welcome to Science Friday, Kevin.
Hi, Ira.
Hi there. Steve, let me begin with you. You say that there are misconceptions about the president's Moon and Mars programs?
Yes.
Tell us what we're misconceiving.
Well, I think it's even just by the way you refer to the title of it. When we talk about the president's vision for exploration, it's not just about the Moon and Mars. It's about both using both robots and humans in the effort to pursue our scientific goals. So I think when people just focus on the Moon-Mars aspect of it, I think they're taking a limited view of what's a much more expansive and much more exciting effort.
What about its expense? People say it's very expensive. You don't think it's that expensive?
Well, key to our strategy on going forward, in fact, this is another one of the key misconceptions on it, is that NASA is going to need significantly more money to do this. After all, during the Apollo program, NASA's budget did go significantly higher over a few short years to make it happen. This time around, our strategy is fundamentally different on how we plan to pursue it. We are looking to live within the existing dollars that we have today that Congress provides for us. Currently, Congress provides about $16 billion a year. And our strategy is over the next few years to make investments in science and technology to make informed decisions as to how we go back to the moon. Because this time when we go back to the moon, we're not going just for a visit, we're going to stay. And that by the end of the decade, we plan to retire the space shuttle and use the savings from the space shuttle to invest in those vehicles that allow us to go back to the moon. So we're really not asking for any more money. We're just asking for the same dollars we're generally getting today and allowing us to make priorities within that amount.
What was the rationale? And I'm not going to beat a dead horse here. What was the rationale for not allowing the mission to the Hubble Space Telescope to repair it?
Certainly that was perhaps the most difficult decision we've had to make in the last few months. And although it was announced with the budget when it was released, the decision itself was not a budget decision. It was one based upon risk. We had determined earlier that the space shuttle could not perform the mission to go to the Hubble, and we were looking at robotic means from which to do that. And we had undertaken our own independent assessment on it. The National Academy recently weighed in on it. And we determined in a rather difficult fashion that the risk of having to send the robot up to the Hubble perhaps would not be there in time to save the Hubble. So instead, we've taken a strategy where the focus is not so much on the Hubble, but make sure that we keep the science from the Hubble going as long as possible and that we build upon it when the Hubble's no longer operating.
When you say the risk, you mean to astronauts in a repair mission?
Well, in the case of the space shuttle, as you know, we're still coming off the Columbia accident, and we had a very extensive investigation into that. And a couple of recommendations that were critical for us is, one, that we should not rush a shuttle to launch. Otherwise, we run the risk of cutting corners. Second is that when we go into space in the shuttle in the future, we need to be able to do inspections of the shuttle to make sure we don't have the same problem that doomed the Columbia, as well as to provide a place for the astronauts to stay safely. If we were to do a Hubble now, unlike in the past, we would have to rush a shuttle to get it flown by 2007 before the Hubble would perhaps start its demise. And there is no capability to do inspection or what we call safe haven, the ability for astronauts to stay up there for a long time in case there is a problem. So for those reasons, since the Columbia accident, we no longer have the wherewithal to be able to accomplish that in the time that we're given.
Do you think when we went to the moon, if we had to have these same risk assessments, we would have ever taken the risk in going there?
Well, what's different about what we're doing to the moon is we're designing vehicles that are going to take...
I mean in the 60s.
Well, in the 60s, certainly, we were faced with the demand of trying to achieve this by the end of the decade. And certainly, we probably undertook risks in the 60s that gave us much more room than we have today. I mean, after all, we did lose the lives of astronauts in the 60s, and we're able to stand up the program very quickly thereafter. Today, as you know, when we do have an accident, we get much more scrutiny, and therefore we've got to be much more careful in how we respond to those.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Marvel, what's your take on the future of NASA and the missions to the moon, Mars, other robotic missions? How is it impacting all of space science?
Well, I think right now things are looking pretty interesting. Like Chairman Bollard said, that the Congress hasn't reviewed yet how they're going to implement the vision that the president has challenged NASA with. But there is definitely a role for science in the exploration vision. We're sure that astronomy and space science is going to play a role at NASA for the long term, just like we have over the history of NASA. But in order for the vision to work, a commission recently said that it has to be sustainable, affordable, and credible. And Steve mentioned and talked about the affordable. To be sustainable and to be credible, it has to do two basic kinds of science. The first is enabling science, science that helps get us to where we want to go, whether it's the moon and Mars or further afield in the solar system. And also it has to be credible. You have to be able to say that you're supporting a broad base of science, not just studying the moon, which is an interesting place, or the Mars as we're studying now, but the other planets in the solar system, the sun. Other stars in our galaxies.
The Jupiter Icy Moons Orbiter was basically...
Jupiter Icy Moons Orbiter was a very large program, and a good chunk of the money up front was, I think, development of new technologies to basically enable us to get out to the outer solar system faster and provide more electrical power while we're out there so that we could have a more comprehensive set of instruments to study the planets in the remote parts of the solar system. I mean, the solar system is a big place, and most of the time that we've spent with our with the Voyager spacecraft and so on is just time getting out to there. And then when we are out there, we have to use relatively limited electrical systems. So a lot of the funds that were in the GEMO program were sort of development of this new technology. And I know that it's been reduced substantially, but I think NASA's committed to try and figure out a way in the future to get us out to the outer solar system.
What about all those gravity wave experiments that were scheduled? Are they still on?
There's still development plans in line for I think the one you're talking about is the SIM mission, the Space Interferometry Mission.
Mm-hmm. The Beyond Einstein ones?
Beyond Einstein actually got a small bump up in funding in the president's proposed budget, which was quite exciting. It wasn't as much as they had told us in the fiscal year 2004 budget we would get, but it was more than it was an increase, and those are the sorts of things that you have to look at in the budget. It's never a black or white situation. It's sort of a mixed bag this year. A lot of the programs that were closely aligned with the president's vision saw some significant funding increases, and ones that are not closely aligned with the president's vision got reductions, but there were also ones that weren't aligned with the president's vision that got increases, and there were ones that were aligned with the president's vision that got some reductions. So it's sort of a mixed bag.
1-800-989-8255. Roy in Williamsburg, VA. Hi, Roy.
Hi. I would like to bring up the issue of the first A in NASA, aeronautics. Those of us involved in the aeronautics program are as enthusiastic about the space initiative as anybody, but we are appalled that NASA seems to be sacrificing its historic role in aeronautics research in order to scrape up a few dollars to augment the space activity.
Can you give me an example, Roy?
Between 1998 and 2001, NASA's aeronautics budget was cut in half. Between fiscal 04 and the projected 06 and 07, it will be cut by another one-third. And the vehicle systems, which is the basic research in NASA, the vehicle systems program, is being restructured to become a DARPA-like flight demonstration program where there's not enough money left in there to really do anything in flight.
Let me get a reaction from Steve. Steve?
Okay. Yes. With regards to aeronautics, actually, aeronautics still remains one of the important priorities for us within NASA. Two key programs that we think are critical for the nation, in fact, are seeing funding increases this year, is in aviation safety and security, where we're looking to allow FAA and builders of new airplanes to build airplanes that could fly more safely. Also making significant investments in something called airspace systems that will allow for reducing the congestion we currently see and working with the FAA to bring online new systems. What the caller was also referring about is we've recently made a major change in the kinds of technologies we're looking to invest in, looking to spend less in areas that we consider more incremental or smaller improvements, and instead looking for things that have the potential to better revolutionize air travel. Just two examples is an unmanned aerial vehicles. In the future, we see airplanes that don't have pilots playing a bigger role in not only things that currently are being conducted today by the military, but even civilian use.
That'll be very popular, I think.
I think that as well. We're looking at planes that perhaps will have zero emissions in terms of pollution and trying to reduce noise. And so we're looking at planes that, if you will, are going to be run on batteries and the new technologies which require lighter materials. So we consider those kind of investments as very revolutionary and still very important for our role in aeronautics.
May I comment?
Sure.
What he says is that...
Oh, I'm sorry. I think I lost him. Are you there? We lost him. Sorry, we lost him. Kevin, any comments?
No. The only other thing is that, you know, just by following the news in the recent years, I remember that NASA's also helped increase the efficiency and decrease the weight of jet engines. I mean, I'm not an expert in the area, but I'm sure that that has a positive impact on our country.
Mm-hmm. What about all the NASA has been spending a lot of time in recent years talking about looking back on Earth for environmental programs? Are those being cut too, Kevin?
There are some reductions in that area. Again, that's not a specific area of expertise for the American Astronomical Society, but it's one that concerns us, not just because our offices for our society are in the building of the American Geophysical Union. Those types of investments are very important for sort of public safety issues at some level. It helps us understand our world better, understand the changes that environment plays, weather systems, and all those sorts of things. All very important and valuable investments of taxpayer money. So I'm sure that people who are very closely aligned with those programs are watching the budget very closely.
Mm-hmm. Chuck in Denver, go ahead.
I'm sorry, did you say Chuck in Denver?
Yes, I did.
NASA's supported science and aircraft that provided rides to science payloads that were critical to understanding ozone loss. NASA is also in a position to support science and provide rides to the top of the tropical troposphere and to the top of tropical clouds, which are terribly important to understand if we want to get a grip on the radiation balance of the Earth and to predict future warming. Where do these things that used to be called mission to planet Earth and which are called Earth science, where do they fit in to NASA's future budget? We're looking at cuts of 20 and 25% in the fiscal 05 budgets, which are only finally coming out after months of delay. And the science effort in these areas are looking like they're going to suffer some serious constriction. How does the future look?
Before I get a reply from Steve, let me remind everybody that this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Steve Isakowitz?
Yeah, with regards to the Earth Science Program, you know, NASA is part of a larger federal effort in climate change sciences. We, working with the National Science Foundation, EPA, Department of Energy, and others, are putting together those areas that we can uniquely bring and being able to study the Earth. In our case, it's the ability to deploy satellites to observe the Earth from that unique vantage point. In that regard, we continue to make the investments needed that's consistent with a larger national plan to actually get the research done. In fact, we just recently...
Chuck thinks you're cutting back on those things.
Well, in certain areas, you know, we're going down. We, as part of the normal process in our science programs, set priorities. We have recently finished deploying our first major constellation of Earth-observing satellites. We, in fact, in this year's budget, have an increase in spacecraft that we're asking scientists to compete and throw out their best ideas for what will follow from this initial constellation of satellites.
Yeah, but the simple fact is NASA is the only agency that can get to the tropical tropopause and that can get to the top of those critical tropical clouds. And it's, in fact, in that area where we're seeing constrictions in effort and in satellite validation, where you want to put your airplanes up high and make measurements in situ to validate what satellites are doing. People are holding their breath waiting for information on funding that they proposed for in the last go-around. So I think that NASA is unique. NASA is doing things that only NASA can do when it flies a U-2 to 20 kilometers, when it flies a B-57 to nearly 20 kilometers to study these critical cloud systems, and NSF cannot do it. The Hyper doesn't get that high. And we're seeing these resources go away before there is, in fact, adequate replacement.
All right. Thanks for calling, Chuck. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. Got about a minute left. So what is NASA's top priority now, then, Steve?
Well, our top priority in this decade is to continue to make the investments in the science and robotic work. You'd mentioned the work of the Chairman Bollert mentioned the efforts on the Mars rover. And we're going to continue and, in fact, increase our investments in those areas. In fact, as Kevin Marvel had pointed out, on solar system exploration over the next 5 years, we have a 60% budget increase in robotic exploration of the solar system. We will also use this decade to invest in technologies that allow us to go back to the moon in a very much more sustained and affordable way than we did it with Apollo, so that by next decade, when we retire the shuttle, we'll be able to send astronauts to support our scientific objectives.
And, Kevin, what are the shortcomings?
Well, I think that the science community will watch what happens as NASA moves forward in implementing the vision. We're very concerned with changes in priorities. We want to be involved anytime priorities come along and play off the long partnership that the science community's had with NASA that has generated such great things as Hubble, Chandra, the Mars rovers, Cassini mission, and all the other great science results that the public loves.
And, of course, as we always say, if you don't like the way the direction it's going, you can always write your congressman.
The president proposes and the Congress disposes,
there
Ira.
There you go. Thank you both for taking time to talk with us.
Thank you, Ira.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Ira. Thanks, Steve.
Kevin Marvel, Deputy Executive Officer for the American Astronomical Society, and Steve Isakowitz, former controller and now the Deputy Associate Administrator for Exploration at NASA. We're going to take a short break, come back, and then we're going to have Sir Roger Penrose is going to join us. He's got a new book out called The Road to Reality, A Complete Guide to the Laws of the Universe, and it is a complete guide. It's bigger than Gone with the Wind and very interesting reading. Stay with us. We'll talk about how Sir Roger looks at the universe in his unique way and take your questions, your chance to talk with him. Stay with us. We'll be right back.